Before we open the session to questions, I'd like to remind you in a few words as to the purpose of this practice. Also to remind you that though you're encouraged to ask questions, the understanding, profound understanding, does not come with an answer. However knowledgeable and brilliant may be an answer, it doesn't bring profound understanding, only a superficial, conceptual understanding. And in the understanding of yourself and your connection with the universe, you need a much deeper understanding. So, when you do ask a question, my endeavor would be to convert the question into an inquiry that takes you to silence, in which there may be this understanding, not in the form of a conclusion or a concept or an answer, but just understanding in itself. Means a disappearance of the question. Questions.
Could you describe precisely what the practice is, and also how it differs from what we normally call meditation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, the practice of silence, if we say the practice of silence, implying that we already have experienced silence, should not be called meditation. It should be called Samadhi Abhyasa, the practice of Samadhi. But to make it simple and to make it understandable to people, you use the simple word meditation. Now, meditation also is used in many other ways. People call anything meditation. A guided meditation where you're told that you're walking past a river and you're seeing waterfalls and seeing beautiful things and so on. That's referred to as guided meditation. Some people call chanting meditation. Some people call focusing on a point on the wall, for example, or on the tip of your nose or the center of your forehead. Focusing on that, they call it meditation. I would call that concentration. And the previous one, chanting. So the word meditation is used very loosely by different people, implying various practices. What we mean by meditation is a silence that you discover through the inquiry into yourself. That ultimate silence is samadhi, or union, the ultimate consciousness. And the practice of silence, therefore, would be samadhi abhyasa. Abhyasa meaning practice. So, it's simpler much to say self-inquiry. So, the practice, you ask, what sort of practice is this? Well, self-inquiry is inquiring into yourself, that is not body or mind. And this inquiry is to be done not through any action or through any intellectual activity, but through a shift of consciousness from the outer thought to the thinker, the perception to the perceiver, and so on. So this shift of attention, normally it cannot be done on one's own. Like you can't read a book and then say, I'll practice this. You need an energetic guidance to produce the shift. And that's available in a seminar such as this. You're being guided into that shift. And once you receive such a guidance, then you're like initiated into it, and it becomes possible to practice it on your own. And then it's still advised to get a boost with future seminars such as this, because the practice is easily forgotten. The mind has its own strength to pull you away from the practice. And so by repeated contact with this available energy, you get into the practice of this and you become an adept in it. And then you're free.
Can you elaborate on the shift a little bit more? Elaborate on
the shift. Yeah. See, the shift, you see, the mind is so strong, so absolutely strong, so strong as to produce this world. So we all experience this world. How is it that we experience the world if indeed there is no world? I told you about the experiment in Geneva where matter would be found to be just energy. How is it that we experience a world? It's because the mind is so strong, so powerful, and identification with what's perceived in the mind so strong that we experience a world and we are identified with the sensations. We think it's material, it's hard, it's solid, and so on. So this is we refer to as the outer direction, whereby you experience a world. Turning this direction in reverse, which means going away from the perception to the perceiver, or the experience to the experiencer, changing direction of consciousness is what's called the shift. Now, this change of direction cannot happen through thinking, because thinking is the outer direction. It cannot happen by visualizing, because that is the outer direction, because I am visualizing, I am thinking, I am imagining. So the shift cannot be done by any type of mental activity. So if you can reduce or stop the mental activity, which is indeed very difficult. It is said it's easier to move a mountain than to make the mind quiet. So it's indeed very difficult to make the mind quiet. And the mind, but by making the mind quiet, we don't mean suppressing the mind. That's not difficult. You can take some alcohol and the mind will be suppressed. You can take a drug, the mind will be suppressed, a tranquilizer. You can have distract yourself and the mind will be suppressed for some time or in some way. So that's not what we are talking about. Not suppressing the mind, but reducing all type of mental activity, and that too effortlessly. If you do it with effort, it will cause suppression, or it won't even subside, it might even exacerbate. So quietening the mind what's the question Bruce? The shift. So quietening the mind is the beginning of the shift. Because being in the mind is being right at the periphery, and quietening that enables you to go back to the to where this consciousness, this movement of consciousness, this outward movement, it enables you to go back from where you came, which is now, I say, perceiver and perception. Now, it's easy to say perceiver and perception, and to be able to distinguish these, it's easy to say it, but in fact, the attention is so much on the perception, there's no idea of a perceiver. Right? So, the world has taken our attention so outwardly, there's no consciousness of a perceiver. There's a consciousness that you are there in the world. That's not the perceiver, you're a perception. So the perceptions are so strong, there's no consciousness of a perceiver. See? Mm-hmm. There's no conscious, I mean you have your experiences, but there's no consciousness of an experiencer. Your body is an experience. Who's experiencing it? There's no consciousness of that, because the attention has been pulled so peripherally that there's no consciousness of this experiencer, this perceiver, this thinker.
But if we're aware of sensations,
yeah,
they are there.
Yeah.
But how do we find the perceiver in that?
In the sensations. Because I'm experiencing a sensation,
mm-hmm,
of pain, or pleasure, or sound, or whatever, the five senses. I'm experiencing the sensations. There's an experience of the sensations. But if our attention is so much on the sensation, there's no awareness of the experiencer.
But if there is a tactile sensation,
yeah,
there's an oral sensation,
yeah,
and these are registering them.
Yeah.
But the idea of a perceiver,
yeah,
is that an entity?
That's an entity, yeah. That's an entity that we're not aware of.
Hmm.
And it has to be discovered or inquired into. See, we're not aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you think of yourself as this body,
mm-hmm,
huh? Called Bruce Miller, American, so-and-so, your description. With the genes carry, your description.
Mm-hmm.
That's who you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's about all you can be. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Or all you can figure out. You can't figure out more than this. You can figure out also your thoughts, your feelings, your beliefs and all that. The whole of this, body and mind, is what you can figure out.
Mm-hmm.
But is this who you are? Or is this what you're experiencing?
Mm-hmm.
Are you experiencing a body? So if you're experiencing a body, there must be an experiencer. But we are so attached to the experience of the body that we don't realize there's an experiencer there.
Mm-hmm.
See? And this can only come into awareness if you inquire into it. And you can only inquire into it when the mind is quiet.
Is this what we call the witness?
The witness, yeah. You'll get to the witness. As you inquire,
mm-hmm,
in order to inquire who you are, you'd have to first stop all reactions in the periphery. But unless you stop your reactions to whatever's happening,
mm-hmm,
in the world and in your mind, unless you stop all reactions, you can't witness, right? Witness means neutral,
mm-hmm,
means no, not reacting,
mm-hmm,
not judging, not coming to a conclusion. That's witness. Mm? The meaning of witness is a neutral. So to be neutral, there must be no reaction of any type of what's happening in the world or in your mind. Now, if you can do that, then you're a witness. If you can do that, then the mind's already quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Because the mind is active in its reactions. When you stop reacting, you not suppress the reactions, but you've stopped reacting because you want to be the witness. You know it's important to be the witness. So you've stopped your reactions. Now, if you stop your reactions, the mind's already quiet,
mm-hmm,
and you're becoming a witness. The mind's already quiet and start getting clear. But the cloudiness, the reactions were causing cloudiness. Identification was causing cloudiness. By your not reacting,
mm-hmm,
your identification has reduced.
The word perceiver doesn't really connect to me, but witness to me,
yeah,
I relate to the fact that we actually have consciousness.
Yeah.
And which is sort of a steady state that's behind all this.
But that witness is only there if you're not reacting.
Mm-hmm.
If you're acting, you're not witness, even if you're conscious. You're in the mind.
I'm saying consciousness.
I'm sorry?
Consciousness.
Yeah.
That the fact that
if you're reacting,
an underlying consciousness to our experience.
That's right. There's an if you can be aware of underlying consciousness to your experience, so there's an awareness of the experience.
Because the word perceiver, it sounds like there's this person or this thing or this something, and that's
yeah. So if you can step back and be in a consciousness rather than in what's going on, that's witness. When I say entity, it's not some material entity. You know, if you dissect the body, you won't find anything there. There's nothing there. It's only a thought or an idea or the root of the mind. Now, in any case, now let's carry on this. When you stop reacting, you are becoming the witness. The mind is getting clear and you're getting into a state of consciousness. You're now conscious of what's going on. There's an awareness of a consciousness. So that's the witness, if you like, or the perceiver. You don't like the word the perceiver.
No.
Okay. That's okay. As long as you can shift. See, if you say that you have shifted from the perception, from the experience, to a consciousness that is aware of what's going on and not reacting to it, that's good enough.
So
that's the witness or the perceiver.
So that's sort of the ground of our being, is
that's
this
right.
consciousness.
Yeah, that's it.
And so somehow bringing our attention or our awareness into that is the shift.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. That's it. Exactly. Now, to help you, that's quite abstract, what you just said. So to help you to have something, not to do or to deal with, but just a little tool, is this question, who's perceiving? If you can do it without the question and just shift directly, that's fine. That happens with practice. When you practice a lot, you can do it directly. You don't need the question. But for beginners or for people who are very stuck with the mind or with the perceptions and the experiences, they may need the question, who is perceiving? You see? To shift away from the perception to the perceiver. So to cause this distance produces this consciousness, and then you're in this consciousness. If you can directly do it, then you don't need to ask the question, who am I or who is the perceiver? So the shift is, to sum it up, just what you said, the shift is a shift away from your experiences, perceptions, thoughts and so on to a consciousness that's aware of all this in a neutral way. If it's not neutral, then it's gone into, the consciousness is lost and you're in the mind.
Right?
Consciousness implying a neutrality. The moment you're not, you've lost this. This gets masked, and you're in the cloudiness of the mind.
I mean, I've had some trouble because I've had experiences in the past which were very deep or very profound, and somehow you're trying to find your way back to that, and it's a lost cause. You know?
It's a lost cause, yeah, because you're trying with the mind, through thinking, through reading and all that. You know? It can't be done, see? But through the practice of silence, you're back there again. If you can be silent, you're back there again.
I have a couple of questions.
Yeah, sure.
I'd like to divide them up.
Yeah, sure.
The first one is about space and time. If there's no space and time, then there's no evolution, is what I'm thinking. Although people say that consciousness only exists to experience itself. So if it is going to, if that's so, and if it experiences itself, then wouldn't that imply evolution of some sort?
Sure.
That's the first part.
Yeah. So is there no time and space, and how can there be evolution? There is evolution. But the point is it real or is it appearance? You see, there is the world which is evolving, but is it real? Or is there something more real? It appears real, and we all experience it as real, but is it in fact real? Or is there... Now, you can't answer this question unless you discover something that's more real, you see? When you discover that, in silence perhaps, then you realize that this is indeed a perception, see? And of course there's evolution in the perception.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the second part is, this is a very judgmental observation.
Sure, no, you're welcome.
I hope you'll pick
you're welcome.
Apart.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome to.
It's put me off for several years meeting seekers like myself who have treated compassion in a certain way.
Mm.
Because we talk about compassion as being compassion for the self, somehow, as what you were saying yesterday, the aggressor and the victim, the compassion seems to get lost for the other people. It seems to be, because I've reached this position of enlightenment, or because I'm close to enlightenment, it gives me a way to not be involved in my actor's role with pain or the difficulty of the people in my life. What is that compassion confusion?
Okay. So yesterday it was brought up by... what's the name?
This gentleman?
Graham. Yeah. He said, it's compassion when you have compassion for somebody or some situation.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a duality? And I said, yes. I said, but that's not the compassion I was speaking about. I was speaking about silence. I was asking, what is silence?
Mm-hmm.
Is it compassion? Now, not I am compassionate. That's duality.
Mm-hmm.
But silence itself, I asked, is it love, is it beauty, is it mystery, is it pure intelligence, is it creativity, it's all of these.
Mm-hmm.
Is it compassion? See? So it's compassion itself. Then when he asked compassion for somebody, I said, no, it's compassion born out of the understanding that everything is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like how would you not have compassion for your little finger if it's hurt? Hmm? Because it's all part of you.
Well, because you're connected.
Exactly. You're connected, and out of that comes compassion. Not, I'm compassionate with someone in Africa who's suffering. See, because that's already separating. You see? That's already separating. You're already causing a duality. And then being guilty about their suffering and feeling compassionate. See, as different from,
mm-hmm.
as different from the person in Africa, the person in all parts of the world, the stars, the moon, the sun, everything is in my consciousness.
Mm.
Everything is in my consciousness. And realizing that everything is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't help be compassion. Now the compassion may or may not play out in action. For example, the suffering in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I may not be able to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if there may be compassion for it, but what can you do? There may not be anything you can do, but having compassion is probably the best what you can do. To do,
mm-hmm.
it's not a doing, but that's probably the best. So you would say rather that the enlightened person should go and do something, right?
Well, what I say is the enlightened person should not take that as a concept and not be engaged in that life that is the actor's role, as you were saying yesterday. We put this mantle on and become the actor in our life. It's whatever, fireman or duty. But I've seen people go, because they have learned a certain amount, go, I don't need to be involved, I don't need to be engaged, because I'm near enlightenment.
Uh-huh. But then that depends upon what's your role. If your role is to go out and help,
mm-hmm.
then you indeed must go out. But if that's not your role,
right.
you see,
right.
that you don't have to play somebody else's role.
No, I
see?
Agree.
And nobody should say that this is your role.
Right.
You should
right.
recognize your role. So if this is your role, you may indeed go to Africa and start helping them.
Yes.
Hmm?
Yes.
But if that's not your role, you could still be compassionate, but you're not doing anything about it.
Yes.
Hmm?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But
it can't be, as you say, just because I'm person is enlightened that you say, well, that's not my role.
Yes.
That can't be the reason.
No.
The person may understand it's not his or her role. And that's okay. If
yes,
it's not your role,
okay.
you don't do it.
Right.
Hmm?
Yes.
And then it's not for someone else to say that this is your role.
Right.
It has to. You have to recognize your role. Hmm?
Right. That's true.
Is that it?
One
yeah.
More.
Sure.
If you see visualizations, I don't. But if you do. Or colors or things when you're in meditation, is that the mind operating or is that a shift because you're not aware of having words or the mind operating, but it still is the mind.
It's
operating.
The mind because you're still perceiving, there's still the color you're perceiving or any different world that you're perceiving. So it's still, there's still perceiver and perception. There's still this duality.
Okay.
See? So it's still clubbed together as mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the normal conscious mind. It could
right.
be another level of mind, a subconscious mind, an altered state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still mind, mm-hmm. in the sense there's still the perceiver and the perception.
Okay.
Hmm?
Mm-hmm.
So still need to get beyond it.
Beyond
however
that.
Lovely the perception is.
Yes.
It could be a vision, it could be, you know, whatever. You know. Yeah, whatever. No? There's need to, however beautiful it is and attractive, there's need to get beyond it.
Okay.
Anything else? Any more? Do you have any more questions?
Yeah, one more.
Yeah, sure.
Sometimes, again, this has to be my perception, but sometimes I perceive the world as very complex, incredibly wonderful, and other times I perceive it as extremely simplistic. Like, oh, this is just about birth and death.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I... or consciousness manifests something as simple as this. Is that just manifestations of my thinking?
Yeah, that's trying to understand through your mind.
Through my mind.
Yeah, in different ways trying to understand.
Yeah.
Struggle to understand in different ways what's going on in the world, why has it happened, who we are, and so on.
Yeah.
From different approaches trying to understand this. So and so you'll get various answers and various conclusions, but none can be satisfying.
Right.
You know? So we need to go deep into deeper levels of consciousness to get an understanding of the whole.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a higher consciousness? And people say, go to your higher consciousness.
No, that's what we are here discovering. That's what we are
discovering.
There's no other higher consciousness to which you ask questions, what should I do, and so on. Not that. That's not a higher consciousness. That's another part, a layer of mind, you know, which you call higher consciousness. And you ask questions to the higher consciousness, what should I do?
Okay.
That's another layer of mind, fooling yourself and calling it a higher consciousness. But there is higher consciousness or pure consciousness, or deeper levels of consciousness, which we are trying to explore now, no? No, in silence. So silence is the higher consciousness. And silence, just because we sit for an hour, doesn't mean that we are silent. The mind could still be active, but there could be a moment of silence, or after years of practice, there could be a moment of silence, and in that, the understanding is there of that higher consciousness.
Okay.
Hmm? Yeah. Okay. You can. Yeah. If anything comes, you can still ask. Yeah.
It's been useful to me to remember. Use that word. That everything is consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
How I perceive it with my mind may not be that ultimate, which is why the inner work continues. But even to say perceived and perceiver, or reality and greater reality, I think there's only one thing. And it's been useful, as I said, to keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what it looks like, it's not what I'm seeing with
mm-hmm.
my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But there's only one
mm-hmm.
ultimate consciousness, and there can't be any difference. So it helps me not separate things as we go along. And this practice, of course, reinforces that. Do you see a flaw in that approach?
Yes. It's all right to remind yourself, but that's not enough.
No, it works with the practice.
Yeah, so you remind yourself, you're engaged in the world, you get into struggle with the world, into some difficulty of the world, and then you remind yourself, it's all perception. So that's, as a first step, it's okay, so it takes you out of the struggle a little, but that's not enough. It doesn't free you of the struggle, because the mind could still be saying, okay, it's only perception, so I'll do something else, or I'll do this. You're still in it. So it's all right as a reminder, as a first step, yes, to remind yourself it's perception. But then it must be followed by who's perceiving. To remind yourself it's all perception, but to follow it by who's perceiving.
Mm-hmm.
And this takes you inward, clearing the outer struggle. And then giving you a clarity of the situation that you were struggling with. And in that, the problem is over. The problem was the struggle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You see? So, inquiring into who's perceiving dissolves the struggle, brings a clarity. The circumstance that you were struggling with remains the same, but it's not a problem anymore,
mm-hmm.
and you're not struggling with anymore. And out of the clarity now comes a clear answer, a clear action. Not answer, a clear action, which you may do. Or not which you may do, which happens. You don't do it. Because it's so clear that there's a spontaneity in the action. There may not be an action, and there may be no action. But action or no action, that's clear. It's clear whether any action has to happen. And if it is to happen, it happens at the right time.
Right.
So it has to be followed. One can't just say it's all perception. It must be followed up with this.
Jesus said, "Know thyself," was
mm-hmm.
pointing to the same
mm-hmm.
thing?
Yeah, that's it. Know thyself. But Jesus said it, but I don't think the church explains what that means. See?
Not at all.
Yeah. The church talks about Jesus all the time, Jesus as the Son of God and so on. It's on the form instead of on what Jesus is saying, instead of on the teaching. See, that's the flaw in all religions.
I'm finding in this seminar that I can come to a place of silence, but then I'm finding that I'm falling asleep.
Asleep, yeah.
So I'm wondering how to support my practice.
How to prevent yourself falling asleep?
Yeah.
Falling asleep usually means there's a lot of unresolved issues
mm-hmm.
which still have to be worked out. You know, if the identification with the world and the events and happenings in the world is strong,
mm-hmm.
and then you try to do this work in a seminar such as this and you're being guided into yourself,
mm-hmm.
but the identification is too strong,
so
that you're being guided inwards, but there's not enough you're not let go enough for you to go deeper, so you get knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Yeah.
So as you resolve the outer issues, the unresolved issues, they could be so many and so complex, as you resolve those, then you find it's easier. To remain awake.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that the same problem with not being able to go to sleep? Not letting go of the world somehow?
Yeah, if you're not able to go to sleep, it means you're so identified with what's happening in the world that you can't let go.
Mm-hmm.
So it's taking your attention so outer and keeping the mind so active that you can't fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And to that, you can't try to fall asleep, because if you try, that's again the mind.
Yeah.
You know? So, but if you can do this meditation,
mm-hmm.
if you can learn to let go of your thoughts, shift your attention away from your thoughts, then you fall asleep. And then it doesn't matter whether you fall asleep or not, because you're so restful then. You're so restful. If you shift your attention away from your thoughts, you're so restful. It doesn't matter whether you're asleep or not. You're restful. You can be awake. It's even better, actually. It's even better because you're enjoying that restfulness. You're consciously enjoying that restfulness. Whereas in sleep, you're unconscious and you're enjoying the effects of it when you get up by being refreshed. But if the mind can be quiet and you can be awake, then you're enjoying that restfulness.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So, since you spoke about Jesus, I might as well. Jesus said other things like, kingdom of God is within you,
mm.
or me and my Father are one.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave various hints about this.
And that one about, you will know, everything being cloudy now, but like there's a veil.
You see that also, yeah.
Some see beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know if the Christian mystics have dealt with in this in a clearer way.
Phil Smith.
Mm.
But I don't know that he's written anything.
Okay. So what I meant was Christian mystics understand Jesus' teachings better than the church does.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I think it was Graham that talked about this yesterday, and I know that why questions are not able to be answered, so I won't ask it, but in your experience, you know, this, you know, if the truth is no beginnings, it seems so odd, really, this manifestation, this...
It seems odd.
Creation.
It seems odd.
Well, because I don't see it as it really is. You know,
uh-huh.
here we are stuck in this, and sometimes
uh-huh.
I say, "Who made this up?"
Yeah.
You know, well, I know who made it up.
wait. If you're stuck in it, then you're not seeing it as a manifesto. You're seeing it as real.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
And that seems so odd.
That you should be stuck in it.
Mm.
it seems odd that a person should be stuck in it.
That it is at all. That this whole thing.
Is it that is at all? Do you would you say that, or would you say it's the most wonderful, wonderful movie? Such a wonderful movie that, you know, the screen goes where you are. The movie takes you to different scenes in each. You know, I mean, what a wonderful movie that is.
I'm stuck in this movie.
You say, you're stuck in the movie, you could just change your lane and you'll see another movie there. You know? So, I mean, can you imagine such a movie? I mean, if you look into the world, what a wonder that such things happen. Hmm?
Or seem to happen.
So wondering about it, even the wonder puts you into this consciousness. You can use wonder as a tool. Instead of judging something that you're experiencing, just wonder about it. Be amazed by it. Be amazed that you're stuck, for example, or you're experiencing
That's right.
pain, or you're amazed that I'm suffering. When actually it's the self, I'm amazed that I'm suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm stuck, or what's going on in some part of the world. Be amazed by it. Be amazed all the time.
And it's amazing that we may be born over and over and stuck
exactly.
over and over in the
exactly.
same, in another movie.
Exactly. So that's amazing too. But even forget that. But the present is so amazing. Forget the getting reborn. Just now,
right.
when you look at the moon or a tree or a plant or a human being or an animal, it's so amazing.
Mm.
But we've forgotten how to be amazed.
Mm.
As a child, you were amazed with everything. As a one-year-old, you were amazed by everything. You picked up everything and put in your mouth to explore it. You know? You were so amazed by everything. And then you were told, this is a dog, this is a table, this is a tree, and you thought you knew.
Mm.
And that's education. We call that education. And then you thought you knew. You see? And you forgot how to be amazed.
Yes.
You see? If you learn again to be amazed by everything, by the beauty of everything, by the circumstances in which things happen, the way things happen, the way people manipulate each other and, you know, abuse each other and exploit each other, and, you know, tyrants and dictators in the world and politicians and, you know, the whole scene is so amazing if you don't judge it. The moment you judge it, then you've lost your amazement about it. Mm? And that's why it's crucial, what Jesus said, judge not. Judge not. Don't judge it. The moment you judge it, you've lost your amazement. The moment you judge it, you've gone into identification. And you've lost yourself. You've gone out, identification meaning outward into the peripheral mind, and you've lost yourself.
And the minute you think you know it, you've lost yourself.
Also, yeah.
And I just want to... It's kind of a question. It's not really a question. I'm checking something out.
Yeah.
And, this ground of being does not appear to be personal.
Say it again.
This consciousness, this ground of being, is
not personal.
Appears not to be
personal
at all.
Yeah.
It's like the doorway in is turning into the I, but it opens to something which is not I.
That's right.
Not personal.
Quite right.
And it's never gone.
Yep.
Even sitting here, a part of my attention can notice it's still here.
Yep.
Always.
Yep. Yeah, that's good, huh? And so if you can live in that way, in that awareness, then you should have no problem in life.
I'm having a good time.
No, and if there is a situation even if there is a problem, you go back to this awareness. You see?
It is the refuge.
Yeah. And not an escape. It's not an escape. It's going to your source. Mm-hmm. So it's not escape in the sense of a distraction, distracting yourself and not facing, you're still facing the problem.
It doesn't eliminate suffering, but the way in which suffering is experienced is very different.
That's right.
And I want to say I feel very supported being here. And here with you and with the group is easier for me to turn to do that turning of awareness.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's the purpose of the seminar. In this group situation, it's much easier. Yeah. Because when a group of people meet in this fashion for a common purpose, to explore or to inquire into, an energy is invoked that takes you there. See? That's the purpose of the seminars.
Bhagwan?
Yeah.
Could you address the home practice for accessing this when we're not in a group?
Yeah, the home practice, as I said, I think on Friday, or I don't know when I said it, it's a 24-hour practice, whether you're at home or not. There can be the sitting practice, like how we're doing now at home. Depends upon your ability and your desire and your keenness to sit for meditation, morning and evening perhaps, half an hour perhaps, 1 hour perhaps, or more or less, depending upon your inclination. But also to thrive through the day, to be in the awareness of this.
And can these CDs be an assistant?
When you're not in a seminar and you're sort of, the mind is taking you out in your day-to-day routine of the world, if the mind has pulled you out, you know, reading may help a little, but the CDs, which are recordings of actual seminars, and they're not lectures, they're recordings of actual seminars. And this session is a question-answer session, but the CDs of Germany, they're not question-answers. There's no question-answers. Only here we have question-answers. There it's just, I'm describing in words what you may have experienced, and so it's more talking about the experience that you had while sitting in silence. And those words tend to take you back into that. So they can be useful, and others have found it useful. So when they're not able to attend a seminar, so I advise them, don't listen to the CD while driving your car. Listen to the CD when you have time, maybe 3 or 4 hours. When you have the time, you're not in a hurry, find a quiet place in your house, sit for a meditation, and listen to the CD. That'll give you the effect of a seminar. And some have confirmed this. So we take a break of 20 minutes. And then I suggest the last two sessions be in silence. Well, we've covered many questions, we've covered nearly everything, I think. Unless someone has a strong desire to ask it, it can still be answered. But otherwise, I recommend that we do 2 hours of silent practice.